Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 145. Today is Wednesday, March 11th, 2009. On today's episode, I'm going to share some home truths, as I call them, basically some facts about New Zealand and what it's like here, because recently I've seen some things on various online sites which are frankly not entirely correct. So I just thought I would share another side. But first, I have a couple of items from the news, and the first of those is actually quite an old one. It was from 16th of February, but I meant to mention it before and just completely forgot, and I found it when I was cleaning out the old hard drive today. And essentially the story is that an obese American woman was denied a New Zealand residence permit. And it sort of illustrates that no matter how qualified you might otherwise be, there are factors that can still keep you from being able to settle in New Zealand. And health issues are one of them. Now, this particular woman weighed 135 kilos, which is 297 pounds, more than 297 pounds. And she already has type 2 diabetes, and she has a body mass index of 50, where the normal range is between 18.5 and 25. She, because of all of this, she is classified as having morbid obesity. Now, there are, of course, people in New Zealand who you could say also have morbid obesity, but they're already here and are born here or emigrated beforehand or what have you. Now, the medical assessor, because there's always, when there's an appeal, there's an assessor who looks at the situation, said that there was a relatively high probability that she would cost the health service more than $25,000 over the next 4 years. And the reason that's significant is because if the medical assessor thinks that it'll be less than $25,000, then you can get a medical waiver, even though you may have issues, health issues. Now, she says that her insulin costs about $1,090 a year or something like that, and it would take 23 years to hit the $25,000 cutoff point. Unfortunately, that doesn't take into account the fact that she's at risk for other diseases, heart disease, arthritis, cancer, gout, increased blood pressure, and the things that causes. And so those sorts of things could also potentially cost the New Zealand taxpayer because of the health benefits. Because remember, once you have permanent residence, you also qualify for the National Health Scheme. And so New Zealand doesn't ordinarily allow people with significant health problems to migrate to New Zealand. Now, there are exceptions. That's not an absolute exclusion. If you have other settlement factors, like, for instance, you already have family here or some other enduring tie to the country, that can outweigh the health considerations. So in this case, that wasn't available to them because they had no ties to New Zealand. They didn't even have any job offers. They were just high prospects for other reasons. And I don't know why. I'm presuming they had a lot of money that they would invest. I'm gathering. I don't know. Although you have to wonder. It says that he was a butcher with an arts degree and a culinary qualification. And she had business qualifications and 17 years experience in design. The article didn't say what kind of design. So I don't know why they were, especially considered in the first place. But it does kind of sound from the reading of it like they probably did make the right decision based on the law and also the general criteria. As I said, if there had been other settlement factors like family already in New Zealand, the result may have been different. But as just somebody who wanted to migrate to New Zealand for a different life, other factors then are important, like how much are they likely to cost the New Zealand taxpayer. And in this case, they reckon that it would be more than $25,000 over the next four or five years. So it just goes to illustrate that no matter how perfect an immigrant may be, there may still be things that keep them from being allowed to settle in New Zealand. The other news story is more recent. It's over the weekend, on Sunday actually. The Prime Minister, John Key, announced that the government was reinstating knighthoods for the top honors in the country. Now, honors are released twice a year at New Year's. It's called the New Year's Honors List. And also on Queen's birthday, which technically is the reigning monarch's birthday. But anyway, that's in June every year. And in 1996, the national government of that day changed the systems, changed what the honors were called, but they did retain knighthoods. When Labour became government in the 1999 elections, they moved to change it, and in 2000 they scrapped knighthoods. Now, a man, when he's knighted, is called Sir, and a woman, when she's knighted, is called Dame. The wife of a knight, of a male knight, is called Lady, but only if she uses the man's last name. So say his name is John Smith, she would be Lady Smith, and never Lady Jane Smith, say, because then that would confuse her with a peer, you know, like the House of Lords in Britain. And but the husband of a dame has no title whatsoever. Those are honorific titles. They don't actually mean anything. But all of this has come about, or came about, because when John Key went to London to visit the Queen, so, no, that's not why he went there. He went there after the election, and he did visit the Queen while he was there and asked her permission to reinstate the titles, because technically all of the titles are awarded in the Queen's name. And she could, you know, do the sword dubbing and all that stuff if she wanted to, but generally that's also delegated to the Governor General, who is her representative in these monarchies. New Zealand has a Governor General, Canada has a Governor General, Australia has a Governor General, and so on. Sometimes they're called viceroys because they're like assistant monarchs. Well, basically, it's what they are. Anyway, all he did was he asked her for permission to reinstate the titles, and she agreed. And so that's how it is. It doesn't require an act of parliament, doesn't require the people to have a say or anything like that. Now, this strikes me as a really bizarre thing to do, because even John Key has said that one day New Zealand will become a republic, which means they're going to have to ditch the titles all over again. So I don't understand the point of why they're reinstating them when, you know, we've been without them for the better part of 9 years now. But that's what they've done. Now, cynics are saying it has to do with the fact that this week they've been introducing some unpopular moves like privatizing prisons and dealing with accident compensation insurance. I'm not going to get into that today. If you're really interested in what I have to think about those things, check out my blog, which is amrins.blogspot.com, where I frequently write on things about New Zealand politics and in the news and so on. There's a whole bunch of tags on the right-hand side of the blog. Just look for NZ Politics, and you can probably find all sorts of things that I've written about the politics of New Zealand. But I'm not going to talk about that today. Instead, I'm going to talk about some of the realities of New Zealand. And it started for me, actually, several weeks ago. I was on a forum in an unusual place, an American store called Amazon, and I wasn't participating, where they were talking about New Zealand, and they were saying some of the most bizarre things I've ever seen in my life. On the one hand, some of the things they were saying, I was thinking, well, gee, I'd never want to live in that country. But the other thing is that people were saying things that were absolutely, fundamentally wrong. And I don't know what the motivations of the person making the post were. I can only speculate because I have no idea, no way of knowing. But they were wrong. And some of these same things come up in other places. Like, for instance, whenever there's a story about Australia versus New Zealand in quality of life or what have you, inevitably, people will post comments to the website, to the newspaper website, talking, basically trashing New Zealand. And that's in fairness, there will be people who, in those situations, who will also trash Australia. But my point is that these people will say things about New Zealand that are simply not true. And so I thought that I would take the opportunity today to talk about some things that are true, or to clarify or correct some of the things that I've seen around the traps. And first off, I'm going to talk about houses. Now, I should say, too, that a lot of these things I'm going to talk about today, I have talked about in previous podcasts in passing or in another context, but I haven't talked about them all together in one place before. So long-term listeners may have heard some of this stuff before, but new listeners probably haven't. Now, about houses. On some of these sites, you'll sometimes read that New Zealand houses are poorly built, but what they mean is poorly insulated. And there's an important difference, obviously. New Zealand houses are no better nor worse than any other houses of their era. You know, you take a 1970s New Zealand house, and it's about the same as a 1970s American house, for instance. They used the same techniques that were available at the time, slight differences here and there, but chances are the quality of the construction will be every bit as good as a house built in another Western country at the same time. You know, you've got to compare era to era. Having said that, there are a lot of houses that were built in the 70s in particular that I think are pretty shonky. The layout's wrong, they're ugly, they're just not nice. But that doesn't mean that they're poorly built, because, as I said, there is a difference. However, New Zealand houses, until relatively recently, were poorly insulated. And that goes way back. Some of it goes back to the era when they didn't insulate houses at all, including even in the U.S. But some of it was, I think, people just deluding themselves into thinking that New Zealand was semi-tropical when it isn't. It's far more temperate than that. But be that as it may, I mean, I don't really know why they didn't move sooner. They just didn't. And up until the 1980s, I believe there were no insulation requirements whatsoever. And then they started insulating houses and raising the requirements increasingly as time went on. Until now, the requirements are pretty stiff, although the country is divided into three zones, with obviously the most insulation required in the coldest zones. But in parts of the country, they're now requiring double glazing in the windows as well, which has not happened before. And you'd be hard-pressed to find houses in New Zealand that have storm windows. Actually, very often they don't even have screens, but that's a whole other issue. So things have changed over time, and the houses are definitely getting better. However, the death rate in New Zealand in the wintertime is higher than you would ordinarily expect it to be for winter. Now, death rates always go up in winter because people are confined, communicable diseases are spread more easily, those kinds of things. It's harder on elderly people or the chronically ill. All of that raises death levels, but New Zealand's is still higher than you'd expect it to be, even given all that. And the main suspect for that is considered to be cold houses. Not just insulation, but also the lack of central heating. That is true. As a general rule of thumb, central heating in New Zealand houses is very rare. Now, of course, our house is fairly new. It's only about 5 years old, I think. And it is over-insulated, and it has central heating and air conditioning. That is unusual. What is far more common is for people to have electric space heaters of one sort or another, either oil-filled radiators, essentially, or the fan-type heaters or radiant heaters of that sort, or gas heaters in the house. Now, New Zealand, I think, is one of two countries that I know of for sure that allows unflued gas heaters inside a house, LPG, or what do you call it, propane in the U.S. And Italy is the other, which is where actually most of them come from originally. They're moving away from those because those heaters, in addition to their fumes, also put out a lot of moisture, which only makes matters worse in the wintertime when there's problems with cold and damp. So the move has been toward getting people to move away from unflued gas heaters and ideally from the need to have much electric heat at all. Or if they do have electric heat, to do as we do, which is to have a heat pump, which of course cools in summer and heats in winter. It's much more efficient than ordinary electric heaters. And there's also been a move to insulate more houses. Now, the national-led government has backed off plans to help insulate poor people's houses, which I personally think is a mistake, but there you go. Now, another characteristic of New Zealand houses is that they typically don't have basements or even concrete slabs. They are usually built on piles, which are either wood or sometimes brick pillars, basically. And how big they are and how far apart they are depends on the construction of the house, by and large. In hilly areas, like Auckland is, they'll often be placed on poles, which are like telephone poles, basically, giant, massive things, preserved timber. And it can be sort of an unusual thing the first time you see it, when you see a house that's actually quite high up on the ground on these wooden poles. And it led one of my American relatives to refer to New Zealand houses being on stilts. They are most assuredly not on stilts. And it is just to help it sit on the lay of the land rather than trying to, you know, build a lot of retaining walls and invite problems with unstable hillsides and things. They put the poles on there so that the houses can sit on the hillside. Now, in a geologically active area like a good portion of New Zealand is, it's not actually a bad idea to be sitting on wooden poles or piles because it gives the house the chance to move in an earthquake. If it's sitting on a concrete wall, even if it's concrete block, the wall is likely to break. It will certainly crack, but could it very well break and even collapse in the forces of an earthquake, whereas if it's sitting on a wooden poles or piles, it has more of a chance to sway with the earthquake and not necessarily collapse, which is not to say that it won't. It's just that it is a bit more likely to survive than sitting on a concrete block wall. But that's just, it's sort of a common thing. And in some areas now, they are starting to build houses on at least partial basements, what I grew up calling a crawl space. But not all of them are. Some of them still are on piles and poles. Now, the style of houses varies widely depending on the era and depending on the location, but they're no different really than what you would find in other Western countries, Australia or Canada or the US, what have you. They are quite different from what you'd find in Britain by and large. They tend to be bigger, for one thing, and on larger sections, lots. There was a fad not so long ago to build houses in what they called a Tuscan style, which was actually quite a misnomer because it wasn't Tuscan at all, but it was sort of that kind of look. And those sorts of houses generally would look perfectly at home in any American or Australian subdivision. So they're not unusual in any sense. Now, some people have complained about the cost of the houses, but they're not necessarily more expensive than they are elsewhere, and they are cheaper than in other places. And in New Zealand, as anywhere else, the thing that matters most for cost is location, location, location. The more desirable the location, the more you're going to pay. And it's as true here as it is anywhere else. Now, related to that, of course, is the subject of pay and taxes. And there's probably no area of discussion that is more fraught than that, because people typically take the rates of pay or our taxes and they convert it using exchange rates. Don't do that. You don't ever want to use exchange rates to compare pay and taxes, because it's volatile and it changes from day to day, whereas the rates of pay don't. So, for example, right now the U.S. dollar, let's say, is around, the New Zealand dollar is around 50 U.S. cents, we'll say. A few months ago, 75 U.S. cents. Now, nothing's changed except the relative value of the New Zealand dollar to the U.S. dollar. Our pay hasn't suddenly dropped by 50%, and prices haven't gone up by 50%. Nothing like that has happened. So don't use exchange rates. It's probably better to compare ratios of salary to housing and groceries and things like that. And there are a number of places that have indicators. I mean, there's what are they called? The Big Mac Index, that looks at the relative affordability of places based on how much a Big Mac costs. So there's a number of different ones, and depending on what you're specifically looking for, you might find one that's specific to what you're interested in. But it's not a good idea to try to do direct comparisons by using the exchange rate. It's probably better to look at, if you know how much, say, a profession is paid in the U.S., we'll say, see what that profession is paid here in New Zealand, and then compare other professions, and you get a sense of relative difference. It's complicated. It's not easy to do quick comparisons, but it's really the only thing that works. Now, we are actually getting tax cuts this year. They were put in place by the previous Labour government, and the current National government has promised that more are coming. We do not have compulsory superannuation, which is retirement savings, like Australia does. And also, unlike Australia, we do not have stamp duties. We don't have capital gains or death duties. Actually, I don't know if Australia has capital gains tax, but we don't. So buying and selling houses, you don't pay a capital gains tax. We have GST, which is kind of like a sales tax. It's on all goods and services, and that rate is 12.5% on nearly everything, including local property taxes, which is sort of annoying because it's essentially a tax on a tax. Be that as it may, GST is included in all of the prices. So you go into a store and you see a can of beans on the shelf for 59 cents. You go up to the till and you pay 59 cents, nothing more. Although that's a slight exaggeration, because unless you have cash, I mean, if you have cash, you will pay 60 cents because of rounding. New Zealand has no penny, 1 cent piece. It has no 5 cent piece. Our currency starts at 10 cents. And so they use Swedish rounding to determine the price of goods. But the point is, let's make it easier. Say you have a dollar, you pay a dollar. There is no tax at the till. There are no hidden costs. You go to a restaurant, you get the bill, you pay the bill. There's nothing added on for tax. You also don't tip, by the way, but that's a whole other issue. Now we have rates, which are basically local property taxes, which pay for local amenities. Parks, roads, water and sewage, all that sort of stuff. Everything else is paid out of income and other central taxes. So what we call the state highways, which connect the country, connect cities, the national defense, the police, fire, education, healthcare, all of that is paid out of income taxes and other taxes. So the tax system is fairly transparent. It's fairly streamlined. It's arguably one of the most transparent tax systems in the world. We don't have deductions for home mortgage interest rate or for anything similar to that. You don't deduct your rates from your income tax. And most people don't even fill out a form. And that's because they've tweaked the system so much over the years that they already know how much you paid, and they've already taken out the correct amount of tax. They haven't taken out too much, and they haven't taken out too little. You obviously can check that at any time if you don't believe them, but it is that good that ordinary wage and salary earners don't have to fill out an income tax form every year. It's just not needed. And they don't make mistakes, by and large, for that. There are other issues with businesses and self-employed and people who own rental property and all those kinds of things where you do have to fill out a tax return every year. But as I said, ordinary salary and wage workers don't fill out tax returns every year. On a completely different subject is transport. The quality of public transport depends on where you are. There are some places that have really good transport and some that have none at all, especially small towns or rural areas may have none. In Auckland, it varies widely. If you live on a major bus route or near one of the trains, which service mostly west and south of Auckland, you'd have it really great. But if you live in other areas off the beaten track, then you'd find it pretty inadequate. And I've criticized public transport in Auckland before. But nevertheless, it is here, and if public transport of and by itself is something that's important for you, you would need to consider that in choosing where you wanted to live. But most people in Auckland, anyway, probably get to work by driving themselves. And dealing with the roads can be a bit of a challenge, especially for people who come from North America, because for one thing, we drive on the left side of the road here, of course. Also, the roads themselves, the lanes, are narrower than you will find on a typical American road. And the roads, the highways that connect cities, which we call state highways here, are two-lane roads. You know, just one lane in each direction with a line down the middle, and that's it. The divided highways are generally around cities, and you don't generally find them outside of cities. There are exceptions, but by and large. So roading is a whole different issue than you typically find in the U.S. Another issue that comes up is crime. And despite a few high-profile cases, it's no worse than any comparable area. So if you're looking at Auckland, you would compare it, say you're looking at a particular area of Auckland, you would compare it to a comparable area in the U.S. or some other country to determine if it's any higher or not. Now, the thing is that murders, for instance, are rare enough that they make the evening national news. But because of some media attention, some people apparently think that crime is worse here than it really is. Most crime, as it is in other places, is property crime. And, of course, much of that is drug-related, as it is in so much of the world. Our greatest driver of crime at the moment is what we call P, which is also in other places called methamphetamine. The P stands for pure methamphetamine. And a lot of the crime is and organized criminal activity is related to that in one way or another. And if we could figure out a way to fix that, then we would probably have a much different crime statistic. But overall, as I said, it's no worse here than it is in any comparable area. Then one other thing that I've seen often is racism and prejudice. And again, it's no worse here than in any comparable area, but it's actually better than many. Now, Māori are partners with the Crown, partners with Pākehā in the country. But that doesn't mean that they don't experience prejudice. Of course, Pacific Islanders, who arrived in large numbers in the 1980s, were scorned. And now it's Asians, especially Chinese. And it is as it often was in the U.S., where it's the most recent arrivals who face the most prejudice and ostracism. And it's because they're the most identifiable, and especially in the case of people from Asia. They're physically more identifiable. They may not speak English or not speak it well. Those sorts of things make them sort of easy to spot, you could say. And so they tend to be the object of prejudice more than others are. However, I come from a place where racism and real prejudice was rife in Chicago. And I know it when I see it. And I've frankly never seen that level of racism here in New Zealand. I have seen prejudice. I've seen people say stupid things, and they think they're being funny sometimes. But I've never seen the level of open racism that I saw in Chicago. So it is different here. And when people talk about New Zealand having racism or prejudice, well, of course it does. There's no place on earth that doesn't. However, it's not as bad here as it is in other places, and it's better than in some places. So you've got to take all these things with a grain of salt. And really, that's what I'm saying. When you hear things, bad things about New Zealand, take it with a grain of salt. There are some people who have enormous chips on their shoulder. And when they post to these forums, they see it as an opportunity to get the country back for some slight, real or imagined. And you can't always believe what they say. Now, as I have often said on this podcast and in other places, New Zealand is not perfect. It's not a paradise because there's no place on earth that is. And New Zealand has its problems. It has its opportunities. It has its good things and it has its bad things. It's, in short, pretty much like every other place on earth. Because there is no perfection, it makes it hard sometimes to refute people when they say bad things. To say, no, hang on a minute, that's not true. Well, then you sound defensive. All I was trying to do today was to share some of the realities as I see them. And you should also take some of what I say with a grain of salt, because my perceptions would be completely different from somebody else's. But, you know, I've been living here for 13 years, and I've seen a few things in those 13 years. And I think that I probably know a bit more about what the place is like than somebody who was here for 3 weeks 16 years ago, say. So I might have a bit more standing than some of those people you see posting comments to forums or to newspaper articles or what have you. But as I said, take even what I say with a grain of salt. Do your own investigation. Come here, check it out for yourself, and see for yourself. But always feel free to ask me any questions if you want. I'm always happy to address them here in the podcast. And some of my whole episodes have been sort of structured around the questions that people have posed to me or the things that they've wanted to know about. So by all means, ask away. But that's it for today. And I will be back with another Amrens podcast next week. At the end of this week will be the next Two Political podcast, and then the next one after that will be in 2 weeks. So this is the only Amrens podcast for this week, and then next week will be nothing but Amrens podcasts. All leading up, of course, to the 2-year anniversary of the Amrens podcast, which that episode will be Friday, March 27th. But that's it for today, everybody. Have a great rest of the week, and I will be talking to you soon. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed on a Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.